Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, entitled The History of the Life of Ajamil, and text 26 is on the board. Does anyone know, did we do 25 yesterday? Okay, 25 yesterday. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bunjana Prabhibankaran Balakan Sneha Yantrita Ojayan Payayan Mudo Navita Katam Mantakam Bunjana Prabhibankaran Balakam Sneha Yantrita Ojayan Payayan Mudo Navitakatam Mantakam Bunjana Prabhibankatan Balakam Sneha Yantrita Ojayan Payayan Mudo Navitakatam Antakam Bunjaya Prabhibankaran Balakam Sneha Yantrita Bojayan Payayan Mudo Naveda Katam Antakam Bunjana Prabhibankaran Balakam Sneha Yantrita Bojayan Payayan Mudo Navida Katam Antakam. Ladies.
Bunjana Prabhibankaran.
Bunjana Prabhibankaran.
Balakam
Sneha Yantrita. Ojayan Payayan Buddha Navita Katam Mantakam Gunjana Prabhibankaran Balakam Sneha Yantrita Ojayan Payayan Buddha Navita Katam Mantakam Bunjana Prabhibankaran Balakam Sneha Yantrita Ojayan Payayan Buddho Navitakatam Antakam
Bunjanaha
while eating
Prabhiban
while drinking
Kadan,
while chewing,
Balakam,
unto the child,
Sneha Yantritaha,
being attached by affection,
Bojayan,
feeding,
Payayan,
giving something to drink,
Mudaha,
the foolish man,
Na,
not.
Veda,
understood.
Agatam,
had arrived.
Antakam,
death. translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. When Ajamil chewed food and ate it, he called the child to chew and eat. And when he drank, he called the child to drink also. Always engaged in taking care of the child and calling his name, Narayana, Ajamil could not understand that his own time was now exhausted and that death was upon him. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is kind to the conditioned soul. Although this man completely forgot Narayana, he was calling his child saying, Narayana, please come eat this food. Narayana, please come drink this milk. Somehow or other, therefore, he was attached to the name Narayana. This is called Agyata Sukriti. Although calling for his son, he was unknowingly chanting the name of Narayana. And the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so transcendentally powerful that his chanting was being counted and recorded. Om Agyanachimiranda Shajananjana Shalagaya Chakshuramilchandina Chashmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Ajamil here is in illusion because he's become attached, because he's become distracted. Actually, everything started out pretty nicely. Brahminical upbringing and doing all the sacrifices, worshipping Narayan and everything. But somewhere down the line, he was going for a walk and got distracted by watching this Sudra prostitute who was having some relations. And although trying to control himself, this desire had been sparked and it was a matter of time before he had to act on it. So we can see from this that regulation is fine, but if you don't use it to get at the core, at the seed, at the cause of the sinful tendencies, then it is not a very strong position. We could imagine that Ajamil had gone a different route in the forest, hadn't met them, came back and lived his whole life peacefully as a Brahmana and gone back to Godhead, but it's a very weak position because we don't know what's going to happen. So that's why regulation is good, piety is good, but it's only good if it is connected with actual bhakti, because that is what will kill the desire. That is what will secure our position when we are confronted by something material, enticing, by Maya. And for us, it's easy to have this, you know, to see this actually as a story with a happy ending, because he did chant the name of Narayan at the end of life, and he didn't know what he was chanting, but do any of us really? I mean, is there anyone who actually knows Krishna? Not really. So everybody is kind of in the same position. We're chanting something, we're surrendering to something, but we're not actually sure what it is, because we're very, very small. So in a sense, we could use this to say, well, this is pretty good, you know. I mean, you go on with your life, and then at the end of life, that's the only time pretty much you have to be absorbed, and then everything works out. But that doesn't work, because this is not a happy story, because it's not scientific. It's by circumstances that Ajamil is chanting the name of Narayana at the time of his death. It's his son, he named his youngest son Narayana, based on some previous samskars from his past. And only indirectly does he come into contact with this transcendental name. And we know that Narayana is, like Krishna, is non-different from the name, so it is actually Krishna he's calling for, even though he thinks he's calling for his son. Now, in our situation, I don't know about you, but I didn't exactly have the same upbringing as Ajamil here. So if I adopt this mood of, well, you know, I'll deal with this surrender business later. For now, I can just go about my business and enjoy myself, and then when the time comes, I'll remember Krishna. Chances are pretty good that it won't work out as well, because my samskaras are different. So I will try to go the more direct path of surrendering right now and creating samskaras that will make it easier for me at the time of death to remember Krishna. So we have this idea that certain conditioning is better or worse than other conditioning. I mean, I was just explaining how Ajamil's conditioning in piety was his ticket out of here, whereas my conditioning from maybe a little more affected by the lower modes may not get me out of here. But it's not the conditioning that makes the difference, it's the connection. So Ajamil, he was bound for the hellish planets until he made that connection with Krishna. So piety in itself doesn't do anything. It's just nice demoniac instead of rowdy demoniac. So actually everything functions because of bhakti. Piety, regulation, all these things, they make it a more or a less bumpy ride in the material sphere, but the material sphere is just here to give us trouble. We're not meant to be here. So the example is giving of the fish out of water. It doesn't really matter what kind of arrangements you make for the fish, it will not be happy until it's back in the water. So we shouldn't think that there is such a thing as better or worse conditioning. There's conditioning and we want to get rid of it. And the way to do that is by connecting with Krishna. So the problem is we have lived with our conditioning for a long time and it's become comfortable, because everything you associate with for a while, you kind of get to know it, it becomes nice. It's like that, you know, grandpa's reclining chair he's been using for 20 years. It's just shaped exactly after his body, and it's, you know, it's nice. You know, you can sit somewhere else, but that's nice, it fits. So that's the way we are. I'm just remembering now, I was standing in line for the Mahashop down in the temple courtyard, and I use the term line lightly, of course. And there's this, I'm spacing out because that's what you do, you know, it's japa time. I'm there buying something for someone else, by the way. I'm sense control, so it's not. But and then suddenly in front of me I see this little Bengali fella. And he wasn't there before, and I'm thinking, where did he come from? So this is just one of those mornings where I'm not letting it go. So I say the mantra, line, you know. And he looks at me and he's like, suddenly he realizes he's forgotten it, and suddenly he realizes, oh, we're supposed to, yeah, and line, and oh, sorry Prabhu, and he went behind me, and I thought, well, good, done something good today. And I'm standing there in line again, and a moment later he's there again. He's back, you know, and I'm thinking, this is amazing, you know. So we have a little chat, and he has the same exact realization when I talk to him again, like, oh, sorry, Prabhu, you know, and he walks back again. And I'm thinking, this is very well-meaning, but it's inconsiderate. So this is what conditioning is. It's an inconsiderate way of acting. But there's more to it than that. We can learn more from that. We can learn that I'm intolerant. I just don't notice that because I've been intolerant since I took my birth in Scandinavia. We're very good at intolerance in Scandinavia. That's just the flavor of the conditioning there. Now here in Bengal, it's like diametrically opposed. They're very well-meaning, very tolerant. I mean, extremely tolerant. You got 1.2 billion Indians, you know, you got to be tolerant, otherwise you won't make it. But slightly inconsiderate. So getting on a bus, getting off a bus, doing anything basically, you just go for it, you know, and then you tolerate. So this is just different types of conditioning. And it's not that one is better or one is worse. You could say it's good to mix with jivas, living entities of another type of conditioning, because you are confronted with your own. This is whenever I speak with someone who's coming to India for the first time, I always tell them that whatever your conditioning is, you will be confronted with it. Like if you're intolerant, you will be confronted with that. If you're impatient, it doesn't matter what it is, you will be confronted with it in India. So we try to get rid of that. First of all, we need to acknowledge that it is conditioning. This is what happens, why we say that Ajamil, he falls into illusion and falls down, is because he forgets, you know, and he forgets that he's actually dealing with conditioning. He's still seeking liberation. Everybody seeks liberation. That's what happiness is. Everything we do because we want to be happy. And liberation doesn't mean freedom to do whatever I want. That's the Western model. It actually just means freedom from anxiety, liberation. So Prabhupada describes how there are different levels of liberation, different levels of Brahman realization. He calls it the Panchakosha. It's in Bhagavad Gita 13.5. Anyone? Anyways, Panchakosha. Five realizations of Brahman. At the bottom you have the senses. Everything you know about the world, it goes through the senses. This is a very temporary liberated state, you know, because as soon as the senses lose contact with the sense object, piece of cake, whatever it is, the experience is over and you're not liberated anymore. So it's just a glimpse of that happiness. You know, when you get that piece of cake, you're liberated. You know, there's no pain, there's no suffering. You know, you got the cake, it's good. And then when the cake is finished, your liberation is finished. But then you take a piece of cake more and suddenly you're liberated again. And then that goes away and more, and suddenly you get this feeling in your stomach that you're definitely not liberated anymore. So it's not a very, we don't recommend it generally. It's not in Shastra generally that we recommend this type of liberation from material bondage. And then beyond that, we have the what's called pranamoya, which is called extended sense gratification. Now that works better, because now we're misusing someone else's senses. So that means, like, you have a mother and she has a son and he comes home, and what's the first thing she asks him? Have you eaten? Doesn't matter if he weighs 300 pounds and he is breathing heavy just by walking over the doormat. Have you eaten? You know, because when he's eating, he's happy, that makes me happy. Extended sense gratification. She's gratifying herself through his senses. So that works great to a certain extent, but not maybe so much for the kid. We also see, like, if you are into sports, that is also extended sense gratification. You see the team wins or it loses, and based on that, you're either liberated or very much in bondage. It is less temporary because you can sustain it for a longer time. It's based on relationships, so you can sustain it, but basically it will end still. And then you have the liberation of the thinking, feeling, and willing, actually realizing that there is such a thing as rules in this place. It's not just about what can I get, what can I consume, but actually there are certain proper and improper ways of doing things. So that means dharma, you know. So if you start acting, this is where piety comes in. So if you start acting pious, actually you get better results, even though maybe not right now, then in the long run this will come back in a nice way to me. And then in that way you can sustain it for a very long time. You can actually have a very good life. We see this, very pious people, they're very sense controlled, and they live from a material perspective very successful lives. They always make more money than they spend because they're regulated, you know. They just go to work. It's not when the alarm rings, it's like, oh, not again, you know, because they understand that doing your duty works. Not doing your duty doesn't work. Problem is, you still get attached to that success, and it will end because it's material. There are always factors beyond our control, and finally death, the body will die. So this will always also end. And then we have the realization, no, I'm not any of these things, actually I'm the soul. So this is called Vijnanamaya, the level of realization, self-realization, which is good. This is what we call Brahman realization. And it's good because you see that actually the material, it's just dualities. It's up and down. You know, if I have something good, the opposite will also be there. The potential for suffering, I'm increasing that by increasing my material happiness. So actually we detach ourselves. And that means all suffering technically disappears. Problem is, we are Sat-Chit-Ananda. That means we're eternal, we're full of knowledge, and we're full of spiritual bliss by constitution. That is the soul's propensity. So this disconnection doesn't work because we're active, we are engaged, we want experiences. So it's just a temporary thing before we need to act on it. And how do we act? We act by associating with what we know. What do we know? If we've only detached ourselves from the material, all we know is the material, so we will have to go back into it. So that's why we say the only real liberation is the fifth highest level, is Anandamaya, the realization of our relationship with the supreme cause of all causes, Sri Krishna. That is sustainable. That is the only real solution. So everything in existence is existing on these levels. We are not distinguishing between good or bad conditioning. That's just conditioning, and we want to get rid of it. So that means that basically we agree with everybody. We agree with everybody in the universe. Whatever they're saying, we agree with it. Except one thing. The notion that I, or any of you, or anyone else is God, that we don't really agree that much with. But everything else, basically, we agree. All we do is we reserve the right to put it into the right context. So let me give you a couple of examples of this. You have the gross materialistic atheist, the amoral atheist, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls him. He's basically saying, there is no God, there is only the laws of nature and the mechanical interactions of those laws. And so we say, we totally agree, completely agree, because he can only, if there's no supreme consciousness, he can only see things from a subjective perspective. If he decides he does not want to see Krishna, Krishna does not show himself to him. He doesn't impose himself. He doesn't need to. He's pretty good. You know, he's cool. He's God. He doesn't have like a low self-esteem issue or something like that. So for him, it's true. There's no free will. There's no God. There's only the laws of nature, mathematical truth that he can deal with. That's all in his life that is existing. The only thing we do is we put it into the right context and saying that that is from a subjective perspective, not an objective perspective. And he would have to agree. I mean, he can't really claim to have an objective perspective when there is no supreme consciousness. So for that, we totally agree. We just reserve the right to say that that is not all that there is. We call it under the modes. That means the modes are guiding you. You're not actually in control. This is completely in line with atheistic scientism. You know, not science, but scientism, saying that this gross science that works through our senses, that is the supreme way of gaining knowledge. So we just put it into the right context. So that means we have a platform to speak from. Take another example, Abrahamic religions. There is some idea of one supreme God. Great, we work with that, we agree. He's kind of impersonal. Okay, we can also work with that. That's the Brahman realization. That there are qualities, there is such a thing as right and wrong, but exactly where it comes from and what those qualities are, we're not sure. So it goes from, the reaction goes from God works in mysterious ways to streng verboten to depict God or something. But that's not the important thing. The important thing that is that from the Panchakosha point of view, from Anamoya to Anandamoya, this fits, it completely fits in. So we can work with that, you know, and they say, Jesus is the only way, and we say yes, but we're the ones following his laws, you know, thou shalt not kill, so are you to the best of your ability following that, or are you not? We are. So we can agree with all these things that they're saying, we just add a little more, that is the connection to Krishna, right? Mayavadi. Brahman has no qualities. Okay, fair enough, we can work with that. But all we say is that Brahman has no material qualities. Because they say all qualities are material, so we, okay, all material qualities, Brahman has none of that, fine. But material qualities are not actually real qualities because they're temporary. So they're kind of a reflection of a quality. So if you want to know the quality, you have to go to the source of that reflection. There must be a source. See, the Brahma Parinamavad, these are the impersonalists who say that Brahman does not transform, and all that we're experiencing here, this is illusion, and it doesn't exist. That's what they're saying. So, but it does exist, doesn't it? I mean, it's not like they're walking through walls or, you know, it's here. No, but that's illusion. Okay, so where, if Brahman does not transform, where does illusion come from? Comes from the jiva. I mean, us. But where do we come from? No, we come from illusion because the Brahman doesn't have any qualities. So the illusion comes from the jiva and the jiva comes from the illusion, but Brahman does not transform. That makes absolutely zero sense. So they're calling themselves monists, and we agree there is only one. Monist means everything is one, and we agree there is only one. That one is Krishna. Everything is Krishna, but within that there is variety. What they're actually saying is there is Brahman without qualities, and then there's illusion. That's dualism. So how does that work? It only works if you connect it to Krishna. Again, same principle, you just connect it to Krishna and suddenly it makes sense. You have only one, Krishna, and his energies. That's the expansion of Krishna. Indirectly is Krishna, everything is Krishna. But within that, there is variety. When there's variety, there's also different ways of doing things, and that means you have results. So, if we want to work with that, we have to connect it to Krishna. That's all we're saying. That means that we have to arrange our life in such a way that we can do that, connect that to Krishna, because that is what saved Ajamil, is that he had this upbringing where he was actually in a lifestyle that allowed for him to remember Narayan at the time of death, because he was chanting his son's name, but when it came down to it, he remembered, oh, wait a minute, Narayana. So then that connection came. So that is how, that is why piety or Vedic culture is good. It's because it's easier to connect it back to Krishna. Why? Because Krishna made it up, you know? And that's the difference between when Krishna makes something up and we make something up, is that when Krishna does, it's real. When we make it up, it's not. It's illusion. It's something we make up with our tiny brains, and it doesn't really correspond with reality. So that means Varnashram. That's Krishna's system. That's what they're doing in the spiritual world. And if we do that, then we will be engaged in material life in such a way that we will experience as few problems as possible. So, because we see in the non-Vedic part of the world, which we are conditioned to, it doesn't work out. It just doesn't work out because everybody's being exploited, and the resources of people or the earth are being exploited, and it all goes down. And you see then, at some point, there is a revolution. You know, we take down the government and the people take over. But then what happens? You know, 10 years ago in Ukraine, they had the Orange Revolution, and people were, I mean, in ecstasy. It was amazing, and the whole international community was saying, this is amazing, you know, it's non-violent, they're taking over, the people are taking over, now we'll have proper government. And how, look at it today, what's the state of Ukraine today? Not very good. 2011, Egypt, there was Tahrir Square or something it was called, they had a revolution. Mubarak, I think was his name, they took him out, and then what? That's the problem that happens. They take out the government, but then what? Do you have a plan? No, it becomes the exact same thing based on the lower modes of nature, fruitive activities. So you take out the guy, but the system remains because it's not scientific. I saw a documentary about this situation in Egypt, and you have different groups that are together as long as they're opposing the system. As soon as the system goes away, they're opposing each other because they have suddenly all sorts of different ideas about how are we going to run this country. There are those who are very much for the people will speak and the people have spoken. Then you have those who are focused on the economic development of the country. You have to expand, you have to increase. You have some who are based on more like proper conduct, you know, piety, or there are certain moral laws and stuff like that. And basically that's what we're working with. So this is like the four varnas, you know. So if you go by Varnashram, Varnashram accommodates all of them. For the worker, you have communism. They just need to get their things in order, protected from too much calamity, and they're good. Above that, you have the businessman and the farmer. They need democracy, because you need that. Democracy basically ensures some kind of justice and some kind of morality. You need that for the economic development, because if I make money and someone just comes and snatches it, that's not good. So then, but that's the problem, because you will still be exploited. We see in America how, you know, vicious society works out, not always very good, because it just spreads like a cancer. It just consumes everything. So then you need the monarchy above that. That's the administrative system, in order to control this economic development, so that it doesn't go, you know, haywire. And then above that, we put in the brahmanas, or the self-realized souls, who are basically anarchists, because they function on a level that is beyond any government level. They're functioning on shastric rules that are beyond society. So you don't actually need to regulate them. So the brahmanas advise the kshatriyas, who control the vaishyas, who protect the sutras. Everybody's taken care of. Haribol. And then you have the ashram, which are basically how you situate yourself in your, you know, private spiritual life. That's what it's actually about. That this is where everybody is brahminical. So it's not on the varna side. A brahmana is a function. It's not necessarily brahminical to be a brahmana, but brahminical is a state of mind, and you find that in the ashram, and that means everybody can be brahminical. So when Prabhupada said we are developing brahmanas, that means that we are trying to provide the world with someone, with devotees who can establish Varnashram, so that we can have the least possible amount of trouble, so that we can remember Krishna. That's the point of all of this. You know, it's secondary. It's all just in support of remembering Krishna. So the reason Prabhupada says that we're making brahmanas is because that's the function we're making. It's not that everybody has to be a brahmana. Everybody has to be brahminical. That's by consciousness. We have to be thinking of Brahman, realized in Brahman. That's for everybody. But brahmana is just a function, and that is how you actually create a sustainable society. Because you see Ajamil here, he's falling down, and this is used as an example from Shastra of how it really can go bad. Now, if we take a look at the details of Ajamil's life, it's not actually bad compared to, you know, modern Western life. You know, I mean, he's with the same woman, you know. That's pretty good, you know. So, I mean, drinking's going on, gambling's going on. That's going on everywhere, you know. It's you know, that's how you're going to have fun, you know. So we have to realize we're all Ajamil. And we have to conform to some kind of regulation in order to subdue these tendencies, because we have samskaras. We have this in our subtle body, this tendency. So why is it so difficult? It's because when you're basically in a society that is basically driven by the lowest, the anamoy, just the senses. Because why do we hear always so much talk about justice and freedom in Western society? It's because it's not taken for granted. Now, justice and freedom, that is relating to the extended sense gratification. That is where economic development works. Because if you have justice, you have freedom to act, then you can do business. You know, that's so if you're putting that as your goal, as your pinnacle, this is what we're fighting for, what does that mean? It means that you don't take it for granted. It means you're not there. So you're below that. That's why that's the ideal. So you're actually on animoy. This is animal consciousness, basically. If you're just speaking strictly Vedic, the society of the modern world today is run by animal consciousness. This is just technically what it is. So we'd like to, quite frankly, do something about that. And the Vedas give us all the answers. So the problem is that when it gets complicated for us, because we are what is called Varna Shankara, we are mixes of Varnas. We always hear in the Western world these romantic stories of the millionaire and the waitress. They find each other and, oh, it's love. I love you. What's your name? You know, let's get together. And it's based on love conquers all, but it's not love actually, it's lust, because it's based on sense gratification. It's not based on giving, it's based on getting. So then the difference between the two who are in love is as big as you can get. The bigger you can get it, the better, because then it really gives the illusion that it's actually working out. Love conquers all, and the sunset and all that. But what it does, it creates Varna Shankara, it creates polluted, subtle bodies. It creates a mix. You're not an intellectual, you're not an administrator or a businessman or a worker. You're kind of a little bit of everything. So you don't know what is your duty. Now, if you take on top of that, that in an atheistic society, going against your nature is seen as liberating, because it means I can do anything. The fact that you can't do anything is not really taken into consideration here. But going against your nature, men acting like women acting like men, everybody acting like a fool, that is seen as something very great. You know, that's why when you see someone having fun, they're always seen doing something incredibly stupid. You know, it's like, if you're intelligent, that's apparently no fun. So you have mixes of all the varnas, and you'd lay on top of that the tendency to go against your nature. How will you realize that varnashram is working? You can't really do that, you know, it's just impossible. So you have to let go of that. So how do you do that? Again, back to the Krishna consciousness. We cannot do that unless we realize that the conditioning is worthless at best. The more we identify with it, the worse it gets. So we have to identify with Krishna, means identify as a servant of Krishna, of course. And then we can let go of all this conditioning. And then the whole Varnashram and the piety and all that becomes secondary. That becomes in support of, so that we are in a less fragile situation than Ajamil here. Because he was fragile because he wasn't prepared for all the nonsense that was going on in that forest, or whatever was going on. So he slipped, but by proper knowledge of what actually constitutes devotional service, we can cross beyond that. So we hear sometimes, you know, we're not this body, we're not the conditioning, we're not Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, we're spirit soul, we're transcendental, and that's true. In that sense, we are beyond Varnashram, but we have to get to Varnashram in order to go beyond it. It's like science fiction movies, to the stars and beyond. You know, you have to go to the stars before you can go beyond the stars. So we want to go beyond Varnashram, so we have to get to that level before we can go beyond it. So it's not, if you know, if you get Varnashram, it's not important. But if you don't, it is. So that's the trick. So the activities that we are performing, they should be seen in relationship to Krishna. That is the way it will be liberating. If we don't see it in connection to Krishna, it will be degrading. That is why earlier we were saying we agree with everyone, we just reserve the right to add Krishna. Because then whatever it is they're doing, it will be liberating. And they will finally go back to Godhead. So that's the scientific approach. It's all about the name, it's all about chanting, it's all about Krishna. But in order for it to be all about Krishna, we have to make sure we're not disturbed by the material energy. That means we have to have the right foundation, situate ourselves properly. That means Varnashram. So these things work together. So if we do that scientifically, we can be certain of success. Ajamil here, he just saved it in the last moment. It was touch and go, but he saved it because of his Agyata Sukriti. I don't want to take that chance personally, because I don't have to. So this whole mentality is actually gambling. Ajamil was gambling. That was basically his way of sustaining himself. So if we want to stop that, You know, I mean, usually we think of gambling as like going to the casino, but actually it's the subtle mentality of playing the odds. You know, usually you would have a certain duty, but I can do something else because I'm special. You know, I play the odds. But we know from gambling that the house always wins. You know, in the end, the house always wins. And in this case, the house is Krishna. So you want to try and cheat the house, you know, good luck. So it's better to just work with our nature, because the nature in itself is material. I mean, we're talking about conditional nature here. So it's worthless. It's not. It doesn't have any value. It only has value in our ability to connect it to Krishna, thus purifying ourselves and thus going back to Godhead in this lifetime. So chanting the holy name is all, but for it to become all, we have to take care of the material conditioning so that it will support rather than disrupt our meditation on Sri Krishna. I think I will end now. Any questions, comments, chastisements, stories? Mahatma Prabhu. Do we have a microphone here? Yeah. Chalo.
In 3 minutes or less, In 3 minutes or less, can you describe the difference between conditioning and one's nature?
Conditioning and one's nature. One's nature is basically they're synonymous. I would say your nature is your specific conditioning. Conditioning is a generic thing of identifying with the forms of the energy rather than the source of the energy. Does that make sense? That whatever we're dealing with, we identify with it. I'm wearing these saffron robes every day, so I identify as a brahmachari, but actually I'm a spirit soul. I'm not actually a brahmachari. So that generic thing of identifying with whatever I'm dealing with, that is conditioning. Now, nature is what kind of, how that form takes, but based on your previous activities. So then it will be basically one out of four. The mode of goodness, the mixed mode of goodness and passion, the mixed mode of passion and ignorance, or ignorance. So Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Us being Varnashankara, it gets mixed up. So we have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But it's okay, because as long as we take something that's prominent and then accept those rules, it'll purify us and we will be able to work with it. So the conditioning is like ahankara. That's the generic of the false ego. But then upadis, that is the specific things that we're attached to. So it may be so many things, going to the movies or fast cars or whatever. It may also be kirtan. You know, that's also an attachment, but it's a purifying attachment because it's connected to Krishna. So if we are able to just realize partly our nature and then start to connect it, then it becomes more and more clear. We see very often that devotees who haven't been around so long, they're very confused about what's my duty. And if you have that confusion, it's very easy. Just do what you're told, you know, because just following authority will purify you, and your naimittic dharma, your temporary dharma, your temporary nature will come out. If you are brahminical by nature or a brahmana by nature in Varna, that will come out. You will end up there, or Kshatriya, the administration, or the Vaishya, you will just see business opportunities everywhere, you know. So it will come out on its own. So just assume that you're the sutra. There's nothing wrong with the sutra. It's way better than where I come from with my conditioning. It's just a regular guy. So assume that you're that, and just help out the devotees, serve the devotees, and you will find where it is that you're supposed to be. The problem is, we usually take it that I assume I'm the brahmana, or I assume that I'm the kshatriya, and then we'll see, I'll kind of accept as I get chopped down, you know, that okay, maybe I'm not. So if you go the other way, you save yourself a lot of trouble and embarrassment. So, like that. Is that okay?
I was thinking in terms of sometimes someone acts improperly.
Yeah.
And then they say, that's my nature, I can't change it.
Well, That's ignorance, basically. And it's true. It's all of our nature to be in ignorance, because this whole universe, this whole cosmic manifestation comes from ignorance. But the fact that you can't change it, that's not true, because that means you're misunderstanding. Because we're not changing our nature, we're purifying. So that means the nonsense activities or the nonsense mentality goes away. You situate that nature properly. So I'm offensive, I can't help it, it's my nature. You just, you know, accept that. Okay, fine, we can work with that, but then you get the reactions. You know, I mean, that'll just be there. He will have to always explain to him, I can't help it. I mean, okay, fine, you know, but you won't get any sort of responsibility, you won't get any sort of nice arrangement, you know. Devotees will stop helping you out because you're offensive. So fine, if you can't help it, you know, it's just, you can either learn subtly or grossly, you know. So if let's say you're giving the example that we're talking, okay, Prabhu, maybe, you know, putting something moochy in with the halava is not such a good idea. Oh, it's my nature, I can't help it. Okay, so next time you won't get halava. You know, the bucket just goes whizz past you, and, you know, because you can't deal properly. So that just went from the subtle way of learning to the gross way of learning, you know. So if you don't want to learn, it's my nature, I can't help it, then fine, you know, we have different methods. You know, so that'll be there. And we see also that devotees, they can make offenses for a long time, and they say, no, this is my nature, I'm, you know, and then suddenly it breaks down, and they just, I mean, seriously crack, because they haven't been able to learn. And Krishna speaks softly, then he speaks firmly, then he speaks loudly, and then wir haben andere Methoden. You know, finally, if you just refuse to learn, then you must just take the karma of that. So, you know, we will learn. There is only one path. It's just a matter of how cooperative we are. Is that better? Okay, thank you. Anyone else? No? Jai. Pandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki? Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki? Jai. Hare Krishna.